This is James Corbett, and you're tuned into CorbettReport.com. It is the 13th of September, 2011, here in Japan, and today we're talking to Joe Loria, a New York-based foreign affairs correspondent and investigative journalist whose work has been featured in the Sunday Times, the Boston Globe, Bloomberg News, and numerous other outlets. He's currently the UN correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. Joe Loria, thank you very much for taking time to talk with us today on the Corbett Report.
Thank you, James, for having me on your show.
All right. Well, today I'd like to get into the topic of the Palestinian Authority, which, as I'm sure many of my listeners know, is engaging this month in a bid to attain a full membership in the United Nations. And I guess where I'd like to start today is talking a little bit about what this actually means, what type of process would be involved in this, whether there are historical precedents for this type of thing, and what types of practical outcomes or ramifications this would have. So perhaps you can start by telling us what kind of process is really involved in a new state being accepted into the United Nations.
Well, thank you for asking that question. It's an opportunity to clear up huge misconceptions that are being repeated in the press here in the West and elsewhere. And you really have to be kind of an insider at the UN, as I've been for 20 years, which normally people aren't too interested in the kinds of things you learn in the back rooms of the UN for 20 years. But on this issue, this knowledge is useful because there's a lot of misconceptions. The first one is the UN does not recognize a state. I've seen written, even in my own newspaper, I have to say, in the Wall Street Journal, that the Security Council creates states. This is not true. States are recognized by individual governments. The Palestinians have declared a state some time ago, and it's been recognized by 122 countries already. Therefore, I remember walking by in Rabat on the street, and I passed the Palestinian embassy. There are embassies. I'm not sure they're in all 122 countries yet, but there are embassies of Palestine around the world, not just in the Middle East, but most of the Middle East, Arab countries, obviously, in the Middle East, have recognized Palestine. They have ambassadors there. They have Latin American countries. Have ambassadors there. So in that regard, it's already a state in the eyes of those 122 countries. That is not something the UN defers or confers, I should say, on a country. What the UN could give are two things. Well, one is membership in the United Nations, full membership. There are 193 countries in the UN. They would like to be in the 194th country. The process for becoming a member of the United Nations is to be a state already. As I said, 122 countries have recognized that. Then you have to go through the Security Council, which it must be approved there, and then it must go to the General Assembly for approval on a majority vote. In the Security Council, as your listeners might know, there are 15 countries. Five of them are permanent. They've been there since 1945. China changed from Taiwan to Beijing in the 70s, but it's been China, the United States, Britain, France, and Russia. The victors of the Second World War, have been the permanent members. That means they're always there. They're not elected. They are always members of the Security Council, and they have veto power. So it's an enormously powerful position, and there's two tiers in the Security Council. Any resolution that comes to the Security Council must get 9 votes in favor and no vetoes. So even if the 5 countries, permanent members all vote, if there's only 7 countries, only 2 others agree, it's not a passed resolution. But if 14 countries agree, and only one of those 5 say no, it is defeated in a veto. The United States has gone on record very clearly and said repeatedly now they will veto a resolution put forward in the Security Council for UN membership for Palestine. So there's no way Palestine is going to become a member of the United Nations. As I said, Security Council doesn't determine whether create it as a state. It would recognize it as a member, which means they would recognize it as already being a state. But the United States does not recognize Palestine. It's not one of the 122 countries. And they will veto it. They also are vetoing it because they feel that the only way to solve this issue now that's been going on since 1948 between the Palestinians and the Israelis is direct negotiations. The Palestinians have seen repeated failures in that direction. Negotiations have failed to bring about a solution to this problem in all these years. Terrorism has failed to bring about a solution to this. They are going for a diplomatic gambit here. And there's a couple of schools of thought here. One is that their real intention, or at least an intention, is to get to put pressure on Israel and the United States by bringing this into the UN to get Israel and the U.S. to get serious about a deal, serious about negotiations, about making concessions, about a two-state solution with land swaps, along the 1967 borders. Netanyahu has said he will never accept the 1967 borders. He says they're not defensible anymore, and he's basically referring to the Golan Heights. In Syria, he won't give those back. He won't give it back because the Israelis feel they could, rockets could be fired from those heights down into Israeli cities. So they're going to hold on to that. Another thing the Israelis want are troops, Israeli troops, inside Jordan on the border with the river, the Jordan River, which is far away from the West Bank. And there's no intent. I don't know if the Jordanians are going to agree to this. And they don't want international troops, which would be a solution there. This is to prevent arms from coming in through Jordan into the West Bank. So the Security Council route is dead. Now, will the Palestinians still do it anyway? Abbas is feeling a lot of pressure from the people in the street in Ramallah and the rest of the West Bank and in Gaza. He's a weak leader, and he's staying over his term. His term is over, and he has not been reelected, but he's staying on anyway. So his legitimacy is very, very weak right now. And with the revolutions going on in the entire region, this has had a huge effect inside the Palestinian territories, and they've marched. They don't want any more compromises with the United States. They would like some of them, at least, to go to the Security Council anyway to force the U.S. to veto, which would be an embarrassment for the United States and wouldn't make them look very good and would cause a lot of problems. I think the wise thing might be to skip that stage and go to stage two, and that is to go directly to the General Assembly. Don't go to the Security Council. But as I said, to get membership in the UN, you must go to the Council. So what could they get at the General Assembly? In 1974, the UN recognized the Palestinian Liberation Organization as a representative of the Palestinian people, and they were given a status at the UN, a permanent observer mission. They have an ambassador there. He can make speeches and really very little else. Can't participate in voting. They can't join any UN agencies like UNICEF or the IAEA or maybe the International Criminal Court. This is not open to Palestinians. All they can do is have a representative there and speak at meetings. When the Security Council meets every month, discuss the Middle East, the Israeli ambassador speaks. Palestinian representative there, Mr. Mansour, he will speak on behalf of the Palestinians, but he can't vote. Israelis can vote not in the Security Council, but they can vote in the General Assembly. They're not on the Security Council. So what could they get in the General Assembly that they don't have now is an upgrade from permanent observer mission to a non-member state, or the official word is a permanent observer state as opposed to a permanent observer mission. What does this give Palestinians? It gives them all rights in the General Assembly except voting. And they cannot sponsor legislation. They can't run for any positions on committees. But they would be able to join some agencies. But I'm just now working on an article right now, today, and over the next few days, about this very, very murky legal situation about what would happen if the Palestinians, in fact, are voted in as a permanent observer state or a non-member state of the United Nations. Well, there's only one other country that has that status right now, it's not really a country, it's a city-state called Vatican City in Italy. That is a non-member state of the United Nations. It is a permanent observer state. Previously, Switzerland was a permanent observer state from 1948 until 2002, when Switzerland became a full member of the United Nations. So as a permanent observer state, the rights that it could have are not clear. For example, I just interviewed two very a legal expert and the head of the Justice Department at the Human Rights Watch, Justice Issues, and they are not completely clear yet about whether, let's say, the Palestinian Observer State could join the International Criminal Court. And I've heard from ambassadors that they don't know the answer to this question. They're going to their lawyers. The Palestinians have their lawyers. The Israelis have their lawyers. I've also learned that the General Assembly has hired an outside consulting firm. They're not just relying on the UN's legal department to get answers to these kinds of questions. What can they join? What voting rights would they have? Vatican does not belong to the International Criminal Court, for example. Could it join the International Criminal Court? I've heard opinions. Yes, I've heard saying, well, we don't know. So there's a lot of vexing legal questions going into this. A week before Mahmoud Abbas goes to the UN General Assembly, and speaks next Friday and will tell the world whether they're going to seek membership and then get vetoed by the U.S. and then go to the General Assembly or skip that stage and go straight to the General Assembly to get permanent observer state status. They need a majority of the 193 countries, and they've got a wide support in the General Assembly. It's not clear how the Europeans would vote yet. They want to see what the resolution looks like, what the exact wording is, because in that there could be mention of 67 borders. What would be the territory of the state that the Palestinians want to be recognized by the General Assembly as a permanent observer state? So if the Europeans don't vote for it, and the U.S. certainly won't, there's still a chance it'll get the majority, because of the G77 countries, almost all will support this, and you're halfway there, almost to 108 to 85, whatever you need to get halfway position to 193. My math isn't great right now. And so they could get that, but then, as I said, begins all these legal questions. One of them is, in 1993, Israel recognized the Palestine Liberation Organization as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. They did that after the PLO renounced violence and recognized an Israeli state for the first time. That helped develop Hamas and Hezbollah as a reaction, where those Palestinians who did not want to recognize Israel as a legitimate state and wanted to continue the struggle broke away. But the PLO under Arafat said they accepted Israel as a state, and they wanted then, as a basis to get a two-state solution, Israel, after PLO recognized them, recognized the PLO as the sole representative of the Palestinian people. If the Palestinian Authority, which is a subsidiary body of the PLO and is driving this campaign to get permanent observer state status at the United Nations, if they win that, do they become the sole representative of the Palestinian people? Or does the PLO remain that? And there's a division within the Palestinians right now about whether this is a good thing or not to go for state, because a state status, because there's also an issue of the refugees. The refugees now live 6 million outside of Palestine, and they have no passports. I visited Shentila camp in Lebanon a few months ago. It was quite heartrending to see these people. An old man I met said that he'd rather lose his son than lose his country, because he'd always have another son. And he expects to go back to Israel someday. And I met someone in Jeddah in Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks later, who's a Palestinian, who told me he's an old man. He's about 80 years old. He wants to go back to Haifa, of course, which is a city in Israel, because he was driven out of there by the Israelis, as the other man was. They came with rifles, and there was a massacre in a village next to him, and he ran away to Lebanon so that his village would not be massacred. These people, many of the Palestinians, want to come back again. What happens if Palestine gets permanent observer status state at the United Nations? Can Palestine issue passports to these people? Only the PLO represents Palestinians outside the West Bank and Gaza. The Palestinian Authority only represents Palestinians inside the territories of West Bank and Gaza. They have no jurisdiction over Palestinians living in Lebanon, in Jordan, etc., in other countries where the Palestinians live. That is the PLO who represent them. So this question of whether the PA becomes their representatives, and if they are, can they issue them passports? If they have a passport, they're no longer a refugee. They are living abroad now, suddenly in Lebanon with a Palestinian passport. Right now they have no passport, and they have no rights to work in Lebanon. And the reason for that is, even though it's punishing to this old generation and the next generation, all the people who've been living there since 1948, because they can't work in Lebanon. But they don't give them right to work, or they don't give them citizenship, because they don't want them to stay there, because the idea is to get them to go back at least to a Palestinian state, if not to Israel proper. So this is a huge issue. What happens to the refugees? And again, the legal experts amongst the Palestinians and at the General Assembly, they're not clear about Palestine's role in a Palestinian state under permanent observer status. If they issue passports, what happens to the refugees? These are just two. And there's a third one about the International Criminal Court I alluded to before. Can they join the ICC? It is not clear about that. Can they join the IAEA? And if they are, do they have voting rights? And what are the implications for that? So they're going headlong into this because of a feeling of failure of negotiations, failure of a violence to try to achieve a Palestinian state. And there's fierce resistance to this from the Israelis and the United States. Israel has been lobbying furiously for months to get countries not to vote for this. And it looks like they will lose, and this state will probably come about, this permanent observer state. Now, is that a state? And I looked at the the International Criminal Court's Rome treaty that set it up, and it just says states can accede to the treaty. It doesn't define what a state is there. It doesn't say it has to be a UN member state, which Palestine will not become because the U.S. will veto. So there's a huge – what the story I'm working on now are these very tricky legal questions that come about if this thing happens.
Absolutely a very thorny issue from all sides. Are there any indications from the people that Abbas is meeting with and lobbying right now whether you think they will be going for the Security Council route or directly to the General Assembly?
He kept saying he will go to the Security Council. He's also saying this is not being done to spur negotiations, that the only motive is because it's time Palestine becomes a state. The consequences for the Palestinians and for the PA, if they go to the Security Council, could be quite damaging in their relations with the United States, and they rely on the U.S. and even more so from the European Union for their funding. But they cannot afford to lose the amount of money the United States gives them. And there's a very extreme right-wing leader of the United States House Foreign Affairs Committee now, Ross Letterman, Eliana Ross Letterman from Florida, who has threatened – she's only the leader of the committee, but she's threatened to sponsor legislation through her committee in the House to cut off funding for the Palestinians, even if they go to the General Assembly and get that permanent observer status. So they're taking quite a risk here. It's a gamble, but after 60 years of not having a state, more than 60 years now, I think they felt that this is the time to do this. Now, the Arab revolutions have definitely pressured them from the ground up to do this as well, and they're also planning to have mass demonstrations coincide with this in the West Bank. And it's very worrying because if they occupy an area in the West Bank near an Israeli settlement and they hold on to it days and days and days, the way we saw happened in Tunisia and in Egypt and in Bahrain before they kicked them out of there and the Pearl Monument Square, this could become a very tricky situation. Israelis would have a huge problem on their hands, I believe, because I don't think they could be seen to be using violence against peaceful protests if it stays peaceful. Now, another worrying development is they've armed the settlers near where these demonstrations could take place with non-lethal weapons, tear gas, rubber. I don't know if they give them rubber bullets, but or warning cannon, but I know they have tear gas and other non-lethal means that, you know, a defensive weapon could turn into an offensive weapon if things escalate. So it's a troubling situation there, but that is going to probably happen as well. And there could be demonstrations inside Israel as well with Israelis and Palestinian Arabs to support this move towards some kind of UN recognition, not as a full member of the UN, not to create it a state, but to give it permanent observer state status. So we're moving ahead next week on this with all these legal questions hanging over this and this issue of demonstration, mass demonstrations that we could turn up the heat. It's going to be very interesting next week.
It certainly is. Well, then finally, could you just address a little bit more about Israel's position in all of this now, especially its precarious state given the Arab Spring and all of the events that have been unfolding recently? Really, what could this possibly mean for Israel, and what is its likely reaction if their observer status is granted?
Well, they're correct in saying that, practically speaking, Palestine won't be a state until Israel recognizes it as a state because it is still occupied by the IDF, by the Israeli Defense Forces. It's still occupied by settlers. That won't change because of this vote at the General Assembly whatsoever. What could change is the refugee status, as I said, and it could give the Palestinians more say in UN agencies. They could put pressure on Israel that way, but this is something long-term. But the Israelis don't want this to happen. They want to go through negotiations, but there haven't been any real negotiations. And so maybe this will bring about talks. This might be a pressure tactic in the end to bring back talks, even before the vote next week, although it's getting pretty late now. The U.S. has tried to tell the Palestinians to back off, and they said it was too late. And there are these threats on the U.S. to cut off funding. And the Israelis have armed, at least with defensive non-lethal weapons, settlers for these demonstrations. Very hard to say what's going to happen there if there are mass demonstrations, and what really will look like the next day if Palestine gets this non-permanent state status, this non-member state at the UN. This is a very uncharted waters, legally unprecedented, which is why it's giving headaches to the lawyers about what does that all mean. And it remains to be seen how it will turn out practically on the ground in terms of the relations between the negotiations and between the Israelis and the Palestinians. One thing is that one Israeli member of Knesset that I interviewed, Inat Wilf, told me that she felt that if the Palestinian Authority became the sole representative of the Palestinians in place in the PLO, that Israel has not recognized the PA as their negotiating partner, so they wouldn't be a negotiating partner. I mean, these are just the positions people could be taking because of this unprecedented situation.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball to see how this is going to play out, but I'm sure it's going to be interesting. So people can look for your reporting on this issue and the legal issues surrounding this in the Wall Street Journal?
Yes. And I could add about the pressure from Israel, also from Turkey and Egypt. It has to be mentioned because it plays into a feeling that Israel is having right now, that the stability that they felt with Egypt on the west and Syria on the north melting down, with the Syrian government brutally putting down this rebellion, has got them very nervous. And now the Palestinians' vote coming out at the same time probably wouldn't have happened without those uprisings. I think the Egypt situation, I don't believe that Camp David Accord is threatened. I don't think the army or any of the major political parties, including the Muslim Brotherhood, want to do away with the Camp David Accords that created a peace between Israel and Egypt. And the issue is that Israel killed five Egyptian policemen. And Israel killed, in that incident about a month ago, if you recall, there was a terror attack inside Israel. They pursued some of the men into Egyptian territory and fired into Egyptian territory and killed five Egyptian policemen. This is what angered the Egyptian people that led them to tear down the wall at the Israeli embassy and get in there and throw documents out into the street. That was not obviously the government, the police let them do it. This is a question why. But I don't believe the Egyptian army wants to go to war with Israel. The Israelis don't want a war on their border either. So I don't think that's threatened. As I said, the Muslim Brotherhood, too, and I've interviewed their chief spokesman when I was in Cairo at the end of July, told me they recognized the peace treaty. But Israel, same with Turkey. I mean, Turkey has cut off relations, military cooperation, recalled the ambassador because of the killing of nine Turks aboard the Marmara, the Mary Marmara ship that was trying to go through the blockade last year. So it was the killing of those nine that incensed Turkey, and they're demanding an apology, which Israel refused to give. It was the killing of these five Egyptians that incensed these Egyptians' citizens to attack the embassy. There was an Israeli official I was at a briefing at not too long ago who admitted that Israel sometimes overreacts to things. They go overboard. And I think that was an important admission. He then questioned the commitment of the international community to Israel's self-defense and legitimacy. And I said I didn't think that even with Goldstone report, which was harsh about Israeli military operation inside Gaza during the war 2 years ago, cast lead, and the reaction by Turkey and Egypt now, that the international community, even if they vote for this, is not going after Israel's right to defend themselves or to exist as a state, but is reacting to this overreaction that he himself admitted that Israel sometimes undertakes in its defense. And that causes, it makes more problems for them. By overreacting that way, it creates more of a violent reaction towards them. And I think that the temperature has to be lowered somehow. I'm not sure this vote at the UN is going to do that. Again, the most exciting thing about this is, from the point of view of a reporter and observer, is we don't know what it's going to turn out to be in terms of including all these legal ambiguities right now.
And I understand on the note of the Mavi Marmar that the UN just released its own investigation into that incident. What did that conclude?
Yeah. That concluded that the blockade was legal, but not a lot of countries recognize that, and that Israel had a right to go beyond the blockade to defend itself as a ship is approaching it, but that they overreacted. They used excessive force in going onto the ship and murdering people, even some of those in the back tied up lying on the ground. So the report is very explicit that the Israeli commandos executed, they didn't use that word, but that's what the description is, unarmed civilians. Now, they were armed, some of them with sticks and knives, and they were beaten, some of them. So the soldiers were not unharmed. that the report makes clear, but that even then the reaction of a much more heavily armed force boarding the ship was way over the top, and that Israel shouldn't have done it. And in addition to that, the rest of the passengers on that ship, when they were escorted to the port and brought to jail, they continued to be abused, even physically sometimes. They were not given counselor or legal services for a long time until they were eventually deported some days later or a week or more. So the report was quite harsh on Israel, but the Israelis spun it in their own way because it did give them recognition that the blockade is legal and they had a right to defend it. So they spun it their way, and the Turks, you know, could spin it their way as well. And they didn't even spin it. They just reacted angrily because the report made clear that these killings were unnecessary and even wrong, and they wanted an apology, and Israel won't give it to them. So that's what the UN report said. It kind of split it down the middle, gave something to both sides. Both sides could not agree to this report. The Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the UN, was holding on to the report didn't want them to issue the report for some time because he wanted the Israelis and Turks to agree on what it said, and they could not agree. So it came out, and that was the reaction. And that's why Israel and Turkey are in a crisis right now, because of the refusal of Israel to apologize, Turkey.
Absolutely. Well, Israel definitely feeling pressure on a lot of different sides lately. And as you say, we have no idea to know how this UN bid will turn out, but I'm sure it will be interesting. So I certainly hope people will be staying and keeping up with your work. And I certainly hope we can have a chance to talk again in the future. Joel Oria, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, James. Thank you.